Okay, so I don't want to use this except to when there's a complicated relation or other issue. So anyway, I would like to start with something that everybody will agree with, that in general, neutrinos will decay just like hadrons decay, except for the proton maybe, because the masses are different and the flavor is not conserved, so there's no reason for any of them to remain stable. So,
you need a magnetic moment for neutrinos to decay?
No.
What do they decay into then?
Well, that is the question. The only question is whether the lifetimes are short enough to be interesting, and B, what are the decay modes? Whether magnetic moments will play a role depends on what the modes are. We'll come to that.
The photon, obviously,
is
the one possible.
Is it possible? Absolutely. Yeah.
But the lightest neutrino cannot decay, right?
It may be stable.
It's like a proton.
Well, it's just like a proton. Proton may be stable. Right. The lightest neutrino may be stable. Yeah.
Well, lightest neutrino is as stable as electron.
Pardon?
Is as stable as electron.
Mm-hmm. A carefully phrased statement.
As what? Electron.
Well, the lightest neutrino is as stable as electron.
That's right, exactly. So the standard model, the only thing we can have is radiation decay. And I'll just write down the same formula that Bala just wrote down. And this was calculated many years ago by Alpha. And I'll write down this one formula. Maybe I'll just exhibit it. So there it is. So that's the formula. This was calculated in 1977 by Sergei Petkov and Marciano and Sanda. And
but it should be the same as it was in the previous talk, right?
Almost. Yeah, except, slightly different. In the same paper, we calculated both. So, alpha GF squared, mass difference squared cubed, divided by the mass of the decaying particle, mass squared of the charged lepton going through the mixing angles. Mm-hmm. And if you put in the light neutrino masses and mixing the delta time squares, we know, you get something like 10 to 45 seconds, which is obviously not interesting. We agree with that. So now, what are the experimental bounds? As Baha just told us, actually now this has been improved to what, 0.3 times this, the current bound on the very moment. And that converts into bounds on this CMD that appear here. And this would correspond to something like 18 seconds for the mass eigenstate contained in the electron neutrino.
The gamma bound is 2 years later than this.
Pardon? I have not updated this anyway. So it's slightly better than this. So again, even this is not very interesting.
This is for Dirac neutrino?
This is for Dirac, probably it doesn't make any difference in this calculation. This is off diagonal. So Mylar is okay. So there's no dependence on the Mylar or Dirac nature of neutrino.
There's no diagonal decay.
There's no relevance.
But it must depend on the neutrino mass, right?
Mm-hmm. No, you just have a neutrino mass. You don't care what it is for this calculation. This is for the mass eigenstates 1 and 2, which are contained in electron neutrino. For mu and tau, they're similar bounds, but they're not as good. But they're still fairly strong for the practical applications. So before I go on with the light neutrino, let me just mention what happens if you do this for the KeV external neutrino, the same calculation. So now, in this case, you replace this one by the external neutrino. And this is the external neutrino that you're mixing with one of the charged leptons and couples. You get the same formula, except now the this mass that appears here So this would be the mass difference between the star and one of the light ones that we came into. This will be KeV squared. This will be KeV. And this will be the mixing angle of the star neutrino times the mixing angle of the light neutrino with that charged lepton we're talking about. Let's say it's tau, then this is and one of the two or three, then this is 1/√2 or something. And this will be KeV, this will be KeV squared cubed, and this changes the numbers.
Just not to be nitpicking, but obviously you don't mean a steril, you mean the fourth plus I have states. Because a steril neutrino by definition doesn't couple.
Sure. And I agree.
You mean the
steril neutrino that's mixing.
U4. You mean
U4 that's mixing with the U1 and U4. So in that case, the lifetime.
If you added the steril neutrino, if you added the fourth steril neutrino, then there would be a rate proportional to sine squared of the mixing angle precisely.
Right, but at least the diagram is for the fourth mass eigenstate.
Yeah, but that's, I agree. Everything has mass eigenstates. Yeah. So the number now becomes, so this is minus 1, 2, second numbers, and all the mixing squared, something like this. And the usually mixing is very small, so this becomes even longer. So that's the lifetime that you're looking for in the X-ray sources and so on. So that's enhanced by the number of neutrinos that you're available. So it becomes observable. Now, when I said this bound leads to this lifetime that I mentioned, so there's a caveat to that. Yeah.
It's tau 10 to minus 22, or what is it, tau? Mm-hmm.
Is it, sorry,
tau, or?
Tau should be,
yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Exactly.
Because otherwise it was short.
Yeah, correct. Okay. Now, when I say, if I use the limit that is obtained from the neutrino electron scattering, as I remind you what Baha pointed out to us, that when this, in the data, when the experimenters look at this, they don't observe this fine state. So that can be one of the lightest state that the mass eigenstate component you need to gain into. And then that's why you get a bound on this. But now, the problem is there is one slight problem, and that is the form factor. So if I think of this scattering with a form factor in front, then this, in the scattering, this is evaluated at Q squared of about 1 mE squared. In the decay, the Q squared is of the order of mE squared, or mE squared. So if there's something strange going on, and there's a funny behavior of the form factor between this Q squared and this Q squared, then it's bounded on that. But if it's smooth and it's well behaved, then
But then you have to have some particle with the scale of the other MeV, right?
Of course, if you calculate loop corrections and get the form factor that way, it's going to be smaller. So presumably, there is no such thing behavior. In principle, there is this caveat. Okay.
Sorry, how does electron have a form factor?
Pardon?
You're saying that electron has a form factor?
No, the scattering amplitude has a form in general. If I like this, the four Fermi interaction, it's a point-like interaction, which is usually assumed. That could be a form factor, which is still dependent from the new corrections, which are small, so basically that's kind of. And, if this were headphones, you'd say that the form factor.
I'm
just saying, in general, this is a possibility.
Right.
And this was raised by some people, so I just pass it on to you.
Interesting, but for the electron, do you expect any significant such contribution in the standard problem?
No, I'm not saying I expect, I'm just saying it's possible. And you just point out
so one thing. There is some non-standard model contribution, maybe.
But the non-standard part has to be different from the part that's giving masses.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, both you can get the, root corrections, you can get a form factor.
Yeah, but
I'm saying that that form factor that you calculate that way is going to be smooth, and then you have, you do not have any problems.
No, but then in this reaction, like scattering, if you're talking about compactors, then you probably can talk also about mechanisms which are not magnetic moment at all. Not because with the reaction you can have something which involves electron and all this stuff, right? So it could be more, similar type of loop graphs, but different from normal magnetic moment.
Yeah. Okay. So, so there is the radiative decay does not give you a short enough lifetime to be interesting. So, you look at invisible decays and make a catalog list of possibilities. So, the first one is some heavy neutrino decaying into some light neutrino plus some pair. So this was first considered by Bilenki, Vadim, and Pontecorvo many, many years ago. And they wrote an effective four Fermi coupling for this with some coupling F. And at that time, they put a bound on F, something like this, from the data I got. This is like early 70s. So obviously, this has been improved a great deal. The most recent bound is from a paper by Lenki on Santa Maria.
So did you really need to write that F is less than 10 to the 5 G Fermi?
Yeah, it was that bad. Wow. It was that bad at that time. Yeah. 45 years ago. This is the 1970s.
So how come could they get the most recent bounds? I mean, did they use SU2 gauge invariants
no,
to
no.
related to
you use a Z. Z decays. If such a decay exists, then it shows up in the Z decays.
Probably one would get even better accounts if you take into account that the loose are SU2 doublets in the effective operator where you have four neutrinos. So they should be somehow related to charged lepton paper violation.
No.
Yes.
No.
Why not?
Some of them are singlets. You like them with that. They're massive. Yeah. Can be my own. No constraint. I'm looking for experimental constraints, not theoretical constraints. Okay. I'll come to the kind of constraints you're talking about in a minute. That's the next decay I'll talk about.
Then at the level of the experimental constraints, these two are not related, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Lemke and some, no, I'm,
what, these, no, no, yes, this is not the son of the Lemke, no.
Because
this is a different Lemke.
Yes. No, it's...
Exactly, he is the son.
Yes, this is the son. So, the first paper, the 1970s, Pontecorvo, Bilenki, and Bilenki.
No, but Bardi.
Pontecorvo,
Bilenki wasn't born.
Bardi.
So long ago, this Bilenki didn't exist.
Okay, fine. Okay, so that...
This is the...
What I'm saying is that the second paper, the one that uses LEP, right, that assumes that the interaction remains contact interaction. To those energies, is not, I mean, which is why they get a better bound, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, so okay.
These are different.
I know. Right. So in that case, you have so you can have this. So there, this two becomes four, and then or you can get about five, where five is some intermediate guy which gives rise to this. That's the possibility. But then it depends on what the mass of this is. If this is heavy, then they're bound to strike. If this is light, then it's a different one. Mm-hmm. It depends on the mass of the new physics that you put in.
I thought for that it was Pakvasa, Barger, and somebody else in 82 or not?
No, okay.
No.
Okay, I'll come to that in a minute. Yeah, that was 1982, and that bound is very weak.
Yes.
And I'll come to that in a minute.
That one's a Maya Rambam, right?
Or actually, it's an either this or that. Mm-hmm. So, okay, since you bring it up, let me mention. Okay, so that one, well, that's been, in any case, has been revised, and it's no longer, it's stronger than what we had at the time. So that was by looking at K and pi decay. So. And then if such interactions exist, then you get plus and so on. And so this would change the fact that when a K or a pi decays, you get a monochromatic mu. You know, if this exists, then this is no longer true, and there is a slight continuum. And you can put bound on how much that is allowed. And then you get a bound on this guy. So that was one. Now, so then that coupling will give you bound on decays like mu goes to 3 mu, mu goes to mu plus mu, and so on. I'll come to that in a minute. But that changed quite a bit. So anyway, this bound now is, if I get it right, is this 10 to the 5 has become 1. And this is for the case when the new physics in this decay is at a scale higher than WZ. If it is, there is an intermediate scalar or sort of scalar or whatever, boson, which is lower than WZ, then you can get other things, and then this is no longer valid. It changes somewhat. So I have, there are new paper, recent papers discussing that change, particularly by Chris Sigurdsson and collaborators have written on this issue. So the point is, if F is a sum G squared over N squared, and you stretch this diagram out, this is some M, then this bound depends on what M is. And then if M is lighter than Weak scale, then you get cyclic bound, somewhat bigger. Anyway, if I take this bound, then this lifetime is very long and not interesting. So, you get 10 to 34 seconds. So it's very long and uninteresting. Then this isospin conserving interactions, like the Hawking-Walker mentioned. So if you have this, the left-hand neutrino going to another left-hand neutrino plus scalar vector particle with this kind of coupling, or just a mu here, then you will have similar couplings by SU2 invariance of the charged electrons. And there are bounds on those. Actually, these bounds have not been revised in a long time. But so this is basically looking for a muon decaying electron plus nothing. And such bounds have not been revisited since 1986. But even that's good enough to put strong boundaries. Similarly, you can have tau goes to mu plus nothing, tau goes to electron plus nothing, and so on, if such a coupling exists. So again, that gives you very long lifetimes.
What if the phi is lighter, like a Majorana, then you will get very short lifetime?
Pardon?
In that decay, nu I L goes to nu j L plus phi.
Yeah.
If the field phi is very light,
that's what I'm saying.
But don't you get a very short lifetime in that case?
Yeah, but then you would have this. How do you avoid mu
greens?
That's a problem. Yeah, of course.
But background for that is the usual muon decay.
Yeah.
To electron two neutrinos.
Yeah.
So you have those.
Yeah, but maybe that's why people are not bothered to do it again.
If you use the limits on mu e gamma, do you make this better? Because mu e gamma.
I don't think so.
No.
No. I'm not sure. What would be the lifetime? It's kind of the six, minus six times the branching ratio, which is kind of minus 13, 14. No, it won't be stronger. So that's the only problem.
I thought that if the scalar is primarily a singlet, but then of FU2.
Yeah.
But with some admixture of maybe triplet something, then the charge lepton problem would not be there. This is, are you assuming here that it is entirely from an FU2 non-singlet? Is that, then I can understand that. Otherwise, if there is an
admixture. Sorry, what is non-singlet?
Phi.
The phi has to be single.
Is it an SU2? No, you're using SU2 symmetry,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is phi an SU2 singlet?
Yeah. For example, let's think that. Then this is applied to the muon. If it's triplet, things are somewhat more complicated.
Well, I think there are exceptions to that. If it is a, phi is entirely a singlet,
yeah.
I don't see, for example, how it couples to the charged lepton. How can a complete singlet couple to charged lepton?
Doublet singlet, what's the problem? If it can couple to... it couples to doublet singlet.
Yeah.
Mu to E plus phi. Mu to nu E plus phi. What's wrong with that? Tell me.
Okay, complete standard model singlet has no Yukawa coupling to any of the fermion except perhaps right hand and neutrino.
Huh?
Unless you're okay, maybe you're using some higher dimensional. I don't know how you're.
Well, that'll be, you know, if the chirality flips, then it's a Majorana. That's a Majorana coupling. Then I don't need this gamma mu, etc.
No, but this is five-dimensional by choice because you would like it to be a goldstone or something, but you could just write a Yukawa type operator.
Right, yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah. Well, it's not left-right, that's just, okay. It's not Yukawa. It is not Yukawa. That's why I said left to left. Look at this, gamma mu. I need a derivative just for that.
Yeah. Then what Bob was saying, so
it can't be scalar.
With
yeah.
the Yukawa type coupling, you could have a neutrino lifetime decaying into a Majorana with a very short life.
But that will be left right. Or left.
You,
I understand. But this is not that.
With,
all I'm saying is.
In Yukawa integrating by paths, right?
All I'm saying, this is not what you're saying.
Okay.
Just wait for the next slide, okay?
Thank you. Integrate by paths, you will get the derivative of this current, and then it will be Yukawa, proportional to the masses.
If you integrate.
Yeah, of course. It is derivative, so you can put derivative from psi gamma mu psi, and
then, proportional
then
to the
use the Dirac equation, and that's it, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And that's the Yukawa, and with the small complement, it's convenient to write it in that way.
Yeah.
So if you answered Gary's question, I missed it. So
sorry.
So the backgrounds to experimentally the backgrounds to mu to e plus invisible phi is mu to e plus invisible neutrinos. So how experimentally do they get these?
I go back and look at this paper.
Okay.
Judith Yu et al. 1986.
All right.
This is the bound that's mentioned. It's used in the PDG. This is the same bound. Pardon? Well, you have to make sure you're not missing anything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the kinematically you should know what the electron energy is. Electron energy is completely fixed. It's a two-body decay.
Right?
So you look for electrons of that energy. You don't see it. You put them on. It's the end of the muon decay spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the phase space is running out. It's a problem.
So the bigger one is all phase space, and then this is a smaller one, but particular piece of phase space.
This is the end point of the big one.
Yeah.
So the mu to E decay, the spectrum is something like this, right? And this will be just, if you look at this one.
But look, in mu to E, it would be masses of mu and E enters. In case, if it's the same Calvin, in case of neutrino, it would be masses of neutrino. So this decay would be extremely suppressed.
No. The bound comes from mu decay, not in the, there's no neutrino decay, nobody's seen it. It's the muon decay.
Right, but with the same Calvin, right?
Yeah.
Okay, then, if I write it as in terms of Yukawa Calvin, then this amplitude proportional to
mass of mu and mu. E, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mu minus E, yeah.
Yeah, okay, mu minus E, okay. Yeah. Then here in for neutrino it would be also mass difference, but yeah, mass difference of mass of neutrino. So yeah, so in this way it gives you huge factor.
We're talking about the experimental bound.
About for this,
from this,
okay,
okay. That's what he's asking.
But I mean, then when you apply to neutrino, it will be much smaller.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we can just look at the paper, see what they did.
So the bound is only valid in a very narrow range of
matter. That's the only place that the bound can come from. Because the decay should be there. If it's not there, you don't care.
But that, is this tau, is tau for mu or is tau for neutrino?
No, for mu only.
Sorry.
If I take the bound from here for neutrino, then I get this bound. Sorry, that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
The bound from here, I've not written down. We take the number from here, the coupling constant,
uh-huh,
use that coupling constant for neutrino decay,
I see.
Then this is the lifetime bound you get from neutrino. Okay. Okay, so the only fast invisible decays are Meyer and Dab couplings, which can be any isospin. This was done by Gelmini, Roncarelli, and Chikashige et al. In 1982 or 1. And then there are many papers on this. So in this case, the final state can be anything, flavor, sterile mixture. And there are a number of bounds, including the one that Alex was talking about from pi KDK, which has now been improved by Lessa and Perez a few years ago. And now the bound on that coupling is g squared less than 5 to the minus 6. Supernova energy loss bound has been placed by Yasaman Kazan, which is 5 to the minus 7. And that would correspond to a lifetime for neutrino of something like 0.1 seconds for an electron volt mass. So let me go to what's the current experimental bounds on the neutrino lifetimes. So for the lightest one, the best one comes from supernova 1987A, the fact that we saw some electron neutrinos, and that gives a bound of something like 10 to 5 seconds per EV just from the back of the envelope calculation, knowing the distance to supernova 87. Nu2, the best bound comes from the sun. There was a theory calculation by John Beacom and Nicole Bell in which they got something, I think they got 10 to minus 4, I'm not sure. And then in Camland, we did a similar calculation using Camland data, looking at the decay products, look for the decay products in the detector you see, and that gave a bound slightly worse than that, maybe a little bit worse, in the same ballpark. The lifetime of the third neutrino, third mass eigenstate, the best one we can get from the atmospheric neutrinos coming from the other side of the Earth. And you just take the distance and calculate that they must have traveled that long. And so you put a limit on the lifetime. You can do a back of the envelope stupid calculation. You get this. The fancy calculation, a la these guys, you improve that by a factor of 3. So, of the order of 10 to the minus 11 seconds for the ED mass.
And now, what means pre-streaming?
Pardon?
What is pre-streaming?
Sorry?
Pre-streaming.
Ah, okay.
I just do not know the term.
Okay, I don't either, so that's a good question. There are experts in the audience who can tell us. So
the damping of perturbations because of the energy carried away from the neutrinos.
The bounds depend on whether or not
uh-huh.
we know neutrinos are free streaming in the universe, mm-hmm. and whether all of them are free streaming, or only one, or two, or three, whatever. So that is the caveat here. So this number is wrong. My conversion from the coupling constant bound to the lifetime was wrong. But there are papers by Hannestad and Raffelt, Bell et al., and Alex Friedland and company. And they all get the same numbers, same bounds for the coupling constants. And if you convert those coupling constants into lifetime bounds, you get something like 10 to the 6 seconds per EV. Now,
these are after Planck.
Pardon?
These are after Planck bounds, you're saying, right? After Planck wavelength, because before.
Yes. These are I think some of them were before W map.
But it is not tau, it's not tau, it's tau divided by m or what?
So, this is tau for electron volt mass neutrino.
Right, okay, so it's divided by m, then.
Yeah. It's implicit.
Yeah.
And now, if...
So it's going to be weaker than the first bound? The solar bound is only on...
That's the question I'm raising. So the question is this supposed to apply to all flavors, or one, or what? And if there is, the neutrinos have couplings of the kind that give rise to the decay that we talked about, the invisible decays, then they cannot all be free streaming, because those couplings are fairly strong. And so then there's a caveat, is this true for all? If this is true for all, then we can forget about all this. This is the strongest bound. If it's true only for one, then it may not be true for two and three, and they can still decay.
I think this can be only for one.
Okay.
Because the, because then they will decohere, right? So after they move a little more in the universe, they decohere, and then I think you can, what is that I'm saying?
So there are two things. So for one is whether it's true for one or all. If it is true for all, we can forget about decays in any astrophysical context and forget, go home. If it is true only for one, then this is still possible. And this bound is already strong enough anyway, because with the ice cube type detectors, with the reach we have, so if I have PV energy that we're looking at, and the distances of typical GRBs, then the only lifetimes we can probe are 10 to the 3 actually, 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4 is optimistic. And so this is already good enough that there's nothing interesting here. So the new ones cannot decay on the way from these sources. Two and three may decay.
But it could be like M1 or M2, right? I mean, because we know from supernova 1987A that only one of these two has to be stable, because like the electron neutrino which was observed is like 70% M1 and 30% M2. So it could be also that M2 is the stable one.
Well, my prejudice is the new one that's reaching us.
Yeah, but the uncertainty on the supernova neutrino flux is relatively—it's like 50%, right? So
it it's true. I agree. This is my prejudice. So it's new one.
So one
you're not learning anything about M2 from it.
The solar data now with Brexino one should also be able to put bounce on M1, right?
Why?
Well, you would bounce on M2 because this is M2.
Well, yes and no. But I mean, we're only seeing neutrons coming in. Only neutrons come out, right?
In the high energy region, but in the low energy region that Brexino is probing, you should also see M1.
Yeah, well, so you didn't have to fairly.
So the bound of M2 is because you're in the deep MSW region. You are seeing very high.
Yeah, so maybe you can improve that. But from the sun, it can't be improved very much.
Yeah, then you're right. If you, in this context, if it could be really M2, which is arriving, then you would like to have a bound from M1 also from solar materials.
Did you want to say?
I understand. In principle, yes.
Is there already any limit from IQ?
Ice cube?
What?
On what?
On the lifetime of.
Ice cube is not relevant because of this.
No, but look, ice cube is not, cannot do it.
Yeah? How do you put limits from ice cube?
That's some question, yeah. I don't know how.
Well, I guess you don't know that.
We know the source distance, we don't know the energy that well.
Okay, so unlike the supernova. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Energy, we know the distance.
Well, energy is bigger than that.
Yeah. Supernova is much easier, you know that.
You know that, okay.
We know that,
but you can probably estimate the distance from the isotropic distribution. You would say it's longer than, you know, local universe.
At least you don't put a lower energy bound to the lower bound to the distance.
But wait a second, isn't there an upper limit on the distance from at the very high neutrino energies?
Yeah,
the universe
right.
becomes opaque.
Yeah. The upper limit is 3.8 gigaparsec. It's the Hubble distance.
Okay.
Okay.
Probably it doesn't help us.
Okay.
You're
limited to the
upper
right?
Not
the very high energy.
Yeah, but then the bound is bad because
Yeah. Okay, I think I'm done, except maybe I can show one more slide.
So I also have a question, which is maybe a bit more convoluted, maybe. Because here we are in the neutrino system, it's kind of more, so in the neutrino system I can't imagine that I just So I know another system of particles that decay, sorry. I know decayons, for instance. And I was wondering whether I can, and the quantum mechanics of decayons, one usually does not worry about the things into which decayons decay. One just does an effective treatment of K and decay. So I was wondering, if I want to, now I have three neutrinos. Why can I not do the same thing that I do for decayons, which is I just solve the quantum mechanical problem, right?
You look at the final state.
And I, so if I, when I solve the decayon problem, what I have is an evolution operator, which is actually non-Hermitian Hamiltonian. And then when I solve, and the reason why that appears is because the decayons can decay into others.
Yeah.
And then when I can solve that evolution problem, and then find at the end what is the probability that I find decayons or whatever. So now what I'm asking is, now I have the possibility of neutrinos decay. Why don't I do with the neutrinos the same game that people do with the chaos? I solve a quantum mechanical problem with a Hamiltonian and there is no Hermitian.
You can, but you don't have any handle on the final states. In chaos, you can look at the final states. Here there is no handle.
No, here because the question then turns into something more because there are more parameters in this Hamiltonian, there are more parameters than just the decay rates.
Yeah.
There are other parameters which actually, so the decay rates appear in the diagonal of this.
The off-diagonal, where is the off-diagonal mass matrix
right.
term,
so I'm
the off-diagonal decay term, and
right.
the diagonal decay term.
So I'm wondering what are the bounds on the off-diagonal of this diagonal.
Oh. no, the only bound we have are on the decay lifetime.
Right.
And the mass.
So what I'm saying is that I think that the system of decaying neutrinos is that has more parameters than
sure.
what than
sure.
what than
yeah. So the analogy with kaon would be that for each pair of flavors, take u one and u two.
Yeah.
You write a 2x2 Hamiltonian
right.
decay Hamiltonian.
Right.
Gamma 1, gamma 2,
exactly.
and
exactly.
so on. Yeah.
Exactly.
With eight parameters.
Exactly.
Mij
and
yeah.
Exactly.
And similarly for the other two,
and
every pair.
Right.
Pair yeah.
Is it
yeah.
like the potency, these kind of quantities? I mean, it's just like the Higgs, and you can also move the decay different channels, but this would be corresponding to the total decay different of
well,
mass, I guess.
What I'm saying is that you have, there's a way to treat a system of decaying particles without specifying what's the new physics that is behind. In the chaos system, you have particles that produced by strong interactions,
mm-hmm.
but there's some new physics, which are the weak interactions that make those particles bigger. But what you do is to treat the system in an effective fashion. So you make an effective Hamiltonian, and that Hamiltonian has some parameters. Parameters, one can do the same here in the case when one doesn't
true.
Do
one
can, but it's a topology, right? You just write your decay rate.
You don't
only,
yeah,
one
the only two
and
things you know.
The
only,
just the
so yeah, you can write this 2x2 matrix. It's four.
3x3 if you must. I mean, it's fine too.
Okay. Nice. Well, okay. But then, for each pair you have 2x2.
Right.
For all three,
states, you could put up diagonals.
Yeah, 3x3, but with each element is complex.
So, what question also applies to the decay rate? If you want to say decay rate, you want to decay rate or what?
But this is what, no, but this is exactly right. So, this is just taking these bounds.
Yeah. And there are,
you could place them in this form.
Yeah. So, in addition to the decay rate, which is the only thing we have now, and the mass.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these other things,
yes.
the off-diagonal elements and the,
yeah,
the imaginary elements,
so
imaginary elements
of one. Decays one
yeah.
mass,
and we have no handle on any of them.
It's fine, that's what you would do
yeah.
when you have a decay.
Yeah, but there is no handle on any of them. So we don't know how to get information about them.
So the discussion sort of coalesced
yeah.
around the three. Should we stop here and have
Well, Boris said something to say.
Boris always gets the last word, yes.
You'll make it last but one.
Caveat, this is a really dumb question, but several of us are puzzled about something here. You had a bound of something like 9 × 10⁻¹⁰ seconds per EV
yeah.
per tau 3 over M.
Yes.
Okay, now let me suppose that M3 is a tenth of a volt,
okay.
and that translates into a lifetime bound of 10⁻¹⁰ seconds, something like
yeah.
that. Yeah. But it was attributed, this bound, to the atmospheric observations. And what I don't understand is, the atmospheric neutrinos that come from the far side of the Earth from a detector take about a tenth of a second to make the journey. It's 10 to the 4 kilometers, and the speed of light is 10 to the 5 kilometers per second. if a significant fraction of these neutrinos were to decay in this tenth of a second, I would expect the oscillation pattern to be affected by a lot. So what I don't understand is why the bound is as weak as it is, why the bound isn't stronger, something more like a tenth of a second.
Well, the, these people, Concha and company, they did a thorough analysis including oscillations and decays and the best fit. And then this is the bound they get.
It's very puzzling.
Mm-hmm. So how are you
in the neutrino?
You don't have time in the second Lagrange state, not the third, because it's, you're oscillating through the earth from the neutrino itself.
No, but if you just, I'm sorry, let's sit down and do the calculation again.
Are you doing that?
Just do gamma c tau.
It's not a tenth of a second in the neutrino rest time.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
just do gamma c tau. Did you do that? Did you put the gamma factor in? It's a big difference. Sorry, that's it.
It's why muons you can observe.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. Even I could answer that one.
But is 7 tenths of the ten?
If the energy is a GeV and the mass is a tenth of an EV, then gamma is ten. Not only have we understood the answer to my question, but we know where they got their number. We just reproduced it.
Let's write a paper.
They already wrote it.